Welcome to the Deeks.ai podcast, where Wake Forest innovators unpack the real-world magic of artificial intelligence through candid conversations. I'm Michael Ferrari.
I'm Ryan Scholl.
Please join us as we explore how artificial intelligence is transforming work across campus, one fascinating story at a time. Get ready to discover the human side of technological innovation. On this episode, we are joined by Mark Anderson, Assistant Vice President of Strategic Communications. Please join us as we speak with Mark about artificial intelligence, as he shares how even whimsical experiments with new tech can lead to serious breakthroughs in how we connect. From unusual prompts to perfecting the university's voice, discover fun ways to get started and the surprising benefits of these smart tools.
Stuck right at the top of the list of skills that artificial intelligence is reshaping is communications. We figured we'd go to the top two and talk to Mark Anderson, the Assistant Vice President of Strategic Communications. If you've ever received any type of message within the Wake Forest ecosystem, chances are that Mark has had his hands on it. Mark, we can't wait to hear your perspective on the dynamic interplay between AI and strategic communications, be it either a symbiotic relationship or a clash of two superpowers. So let's jump in. If you wouldn't mind briefly explaining your role to our listeners so they understand the integral part you play in creating that distinctive Wake Forest voice. So over to you, Mark.
Sure. And thanks for inviting me to be on. I appreciate it. Strategic communications is a really generic term. What it really means for us at Wake Forest is I oversee our news and PR team, so folks who are writing about all the great things that Wake Forest does, and also interacting with the media. The digital team, which handles the Wake Forest WordPress install, and most of the Wake Forest websites are on that. Family communications, we have Betsy Chapman in that role, and she really works with parents and families to get the Wake Forest message out. Our social media team that handles the main Wake Forest accounts. And then sort of mixed into all of that is crisis and reputation management. So as you said, Ryan, lots of messages to campus, handling media relations in the crisis and reputational space. So there's a lot of different aspects to the role, and it keeps me busy.
And all of those different areas you mentioned, communications is so integral, and especially in today's society where there are so many different ways to communicate, so much information flowing back and forth, all three of us, it's a big part of our jobs. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, Mark and Michael, a lot of yours is external communications where you're communicating with the outside world. I communicate a lot internally with teams, but communications is incredibly important. And it seems like artificial intelligence is now playing a big piece of those communications.
Yeah, it really is. And you reminded me when you talked about external communications that we actually just hired a new role, and I forgot to mention it. We have somebody in charge of internal communications at Wake Forest now that's just stepped into that role. So a lot of the messages that you see that are internally focused are also handled by my office. When you talk about AI, right, I'm in the crux. What is AI coming for first? It came for writing and coding, right?
So yeah, like
that's my team.
Right at the top of the list.
Right. it also can make, you know, funky images and do all kinds of other things, but really, you know, writing and coding were kind of right there at the beginning where people saw, hey, you know, this is a place where it can augment my job and hopefully not take over my job.
So in your role in your team, what made you step into AI? Was it more the creativity and augmenting skills, or is it more on the productivity side that we can do this faster and do higher quality? What was the impetus for you guys to start investigating?
Yeah, I think it's a little of both, but I would lean towards the productivity side in the beginning. I think I work with a lot of people who are just interested in all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, there was a natural, I think, curiosity about what is this and what could it do? And maybe a year and a half ago, we saw a presentation from, well, we had two presentations, one from Betsy Berry with our CAT program, who I think folks around Wake Forest know that Betsy is, you know, an early adopter in AI. And
she was one of the people who I would say gave everybody their first introduction.
Sure.
Into this whole generative AI trend.
She's been a great, you know, I think person to get people kind of up to speed, and those who know Betsy know she's a great evangelist for whatever she's evangelizing about. And then we also, we heard an agency, a local agency came in and talked to us a little bit about how they were starting to use AI. And really, they were using it from a productivity standpoint. For instance, you know, one of the examples they gave us was, okay, if we were sitting around thinking about product names and we wanted to brainstorm, we might have two or three people on our team. We might spend 2 or 3 hours. We might come up with 75, you know, brainstorm ideas about what this product name could be. Hey, now we use AI. AI can come up with 100 possible product names with a really, if we give it a good prompt, AI can come up with 100 product names in, you know, a minute, and then we can go riff off of that.
It doesn't get tired, and it rarely ever gets frustrated with you.
That's right. That's right. In fact, these days it's way overly complimentary of you.
I mean, you know, OpenAI is very sycophantic at the moment.
That's right. So that was, you know, we started thinking along those lines, and then certainly those folks on the team who are writing, you know, that was an easy place to see where, hey, AI could supplement my work in some way. And I think, like everybody, we've been, you know, we're intrigued with all the fun stuff as it comes out, and so that draws you in a little bit. But I think really the learning curve for most people has been prompting, and, you know, how do we use these tools in a way that we're going to get actual, you know, usable things from it, instead of, you know, kind of the junk in, junk out kind of method. And in the writing space, you know, I think, I was thinking the other day about AI, really, like with a baseball metaphor, with, you know, pitchers in baseball. So you've got starting pitchers in baseball. Well, you know, AI, if you don't know what to do at all, AI can get your writing started with, you know, I don't know, here's what I'm supposed to work on. Give me some ideas of where I could go with this, right? You know, so you could use AI to get going. Or, hey, you know how to get going. You've got the bullets. You kind of know what you need to do. Then you need the middle relief pitcher, right? You need AI to come in and be like, I don't know, clean up these bullets and like help me organize my ideas a little better or whatever. Or, hey, you got both of those things and you're good to go. And then you can use AI as the closer, right? Like, you know, show me where my gaps are in this, in this writing, or, you know, help me improve this or change the tone slightly or whatever. So, you know,
I love that analogy, and I'm going to steal that. also, Michael, I think we are now turning into a baseball podcast, because this is not the first time we've used baseball as an analogy. So thank you, Mark.
Sure. Yeah, it is. It is the season.
That was a really good analogy, though. And I use AI in all three pitching forms that you mentioned, and specifically on the getting started. A lot of times I find that even if I don't like anything that the model is even like presenting me with, it at least gets me going and I'm doing something. And then that is enough. Just even that's enough.
And that's usually the hardest part for all of us, right? Like I got to sit down and do this, you know, and if AI can get you over that first hump of, you know, well, okay, here we go. You know, that's great. And I someday we may be to the point where AI is really doing all kinds of, you know, full stories or whatever, but we clearly are not at that stage yet. And we would never want, in our situation, we would never want to give up the, you know, we need the personal relationships to tell stories, and we need all those other kinds of things. But I, you know, I've also seen other schools that are then using AI to analyze. We are not doing this here yet, but, you know, I've been studying the idea of using AI to study the analytics on the stories and, you know, okay, where should we do more of this? And, you know, there's so many different places you can point AI to help you.
So you've been talking about sort of different ways you've been using ideas. Can you give us some specific examples of how your team uses it? But also, while you're talking about that, maybe talk about the interplay between the tool and the human, because I'm going to go on a limb and say that I probably believe, and maybe you can correct me, that the human in the loop is still incredibly important in your process.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we were talking about writing, but I'll jump over to kind of the coding side. I think AI right now does a better job of helping writers along the way. I think the coding space is really a space where we found that, you know, humans have to be present, because AI is a lot sketchier in, it really can help you in coding, but it also is still making plenty of mistakes and going off in wild directions and doing all kinds of things. Michael, I don't know what your experience has been.
Yeah. I've definitely noticed that it can really lose the thread, and then it is hard to get back on track with it. Like, so that I share the experience you mentioned.
Yeah. And then, you know, so I think the human experience there, I think in the writing, it's still, you know, if you're asking it to cite something or check something or find something for you, you know, at this point, we can't be confident enough that, oh, it's right. I think I saw something the other day that actually it's, you know, most models are hallucinating more than ever now, which is confusing people as to why exactly that's happening. But, you know, it just, you have to be on your toes. And then, you know, you talked about, you know, the messages we share. You know, if we're talking to people on campus, if we're talking to the media, you know, you still need that human to understand what is really needed here. You know, one thing AI doesn't have is, you know, institutional knowledge of Wake Forest. It doesn't really have empathy in the same way that a human can have, you know. So when you're writing something and you really need to understand exactly the right tone, you know, AI can get you down the road, but it can't quite put that human touch in there.
Stick on that thread for a second, please. How do you maintain the Wake Forest voice, which is very authentic and it's very unique? So how do you maintain that when using one of these tools to augment the writing?
Well, I think, you know, one of the advantages, especially with the paid models, is, you know, you can start to really train it. You can start to have it analyze a wide variety of messages. You can have it store that memory, you know. So I don't know. I've used it that way some. I don't know that we're using it that way in an extensive way yet, but I would imagine that's where we're heading, you know, really just, you know, continually saying, here are things to study that we see as positive examples, you know, here is our brand book, you know, here are these kinds of things that you should know about Wake Forest. And then, you know, it'll get you closer and closer. Again, I don't think it can, I'm not sure it will ever get to the point where it really can write a message in the space, especially in, maybe if you're in the crisis or reputational management space, of like knowing exactly what we need to say. But at the same time, you know, that's a little arrogant of me in saying that, you know, I know how to do that, or other people on my team, because we make mistakes in that space too, or we have something with the wrong tone or whatever. So, you know, it is interesting. But I, you know, I think that's where we're heading. I think that's where we're heading, you know, in websites as well, you know, that We could talk about that whole space as a whole different thing. I wonder to myself whether there will be.
Yeah, I'm going to check out and just let you two talk about web pages.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say in the short run was just, you know, there are already AI models out there that can build websites in basic ways. But I think where you're probably getting is at some point, again, you would be feeding it a brand book, you'd be feeding it all this information, and then it really could turn out a website that was more less generic and more attuned to what you were doing. But really, my 30,000 foot question about websites, and Michael, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, is will there even be a web need for websites in 5 years? I could see the idea that people get very used to, hey, I just want to ask something of the AI. I don't need to go to your website and try to navigate through your 30 items in the navigation bar and find an answer to my question. You know, I just want to say, hey, Wake Forest, when are applications due in the fall for early decision? You know, and I want something to answer me. So it's possible that our website folks could be oriented in the future more towards how do we organize information, and which is what we do on websites anyway, right? We organize information,
yeah,
hopefully in ways that people can consume it. But now it would be less about building a bunch of pages and more about structuring that information so that it, you know, a chatbot or some version of that could consume it and hopefully give the right answer to people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my view is I just have this feeling that a good amount of people are going to want to still be able to visit websites. Like I know some people, myself included, who still like physical books a lot, which isn't to say I don't use eBooks, right, you know, or whatever, but there's just something about, you know, physical books. I know people where they still like paying their bills every month, opposed to auto pay. They like,
yep.
I know some people who still like getting a check and cashing it, which is kind of crazy. They like going to the bank, cashing it.
Vinyl albums are back, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have a small collection myself, yep, going. So absolutely. I think there's just this inherent, just like human nature element where they still like that, and they like seeing it for themselves, finding the information for themselves. I think an impact that you will definitely see, you know, for lack of a better term, is I think you'll see websites really have the fat trimmed even more, to where maybe you'll see more single page, you know, application style websites. And so like what you touched on, you won't see the 30 tabs or navigation items. I think you'll see really sleek, just trimmed on sites, if nothing else. But my hunch is that desire to still have the site you can go to, look around, see the information for yourself, I think that's still going to remain at least for a while.
Yeah, it's hard to take 25 or more years of something and just throw it away. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we both agree. I mean, something will change significantly, I think, over the next 3, 4, 5 years in
mm-hmm.
how people want to consume it. It'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah. And then every site will have its AI bot anyway. So you'll go to the site to use that bot.
Right. Well, or at some point we won't have any sites and Google will just, you know, they'll just have the AI bot will answer all questions, right? So
true.
So there's a new theory that, you know, SEO was so popular in building web pages, but we're moving from SEO, search engine optimization, to more of a GEO, which is more a generative engine optimization, which is web pages that are built more for AI. And I think that's, I'm one of those people that I'm starting to just pick up my phone and speak to it, asking a question, getting an AI response. So I might be on the opposite end of Michael. I think I got rid of all my vinyl a little while ago. But I do see a shift in one of the podcasts I listened to started talking a lot about GEO, and I had no idea what it was. So I started looking it up, and it's a small shift, but it's growing.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I agree a lot with Michael and the idea of trimming the fat. You know, there will be less in that GEO world, there will be less, you know, I'm going to introduce you to this and I'm going to have a flowery intro paragraph. Mm-hmm. Forget all that. I just, you know, let's get the facts. And then those facts can be consumed, whether you're on our website or by, you know, a bot scraping, you know, doing whatever. You know, and in a lot of ways, that's probably good. I mean, it may take some creativity out of the space, but I mean, I think there's an overload of information in a lot of websites that we see. And, you know, it's probably good to start trimming them down. I think the mm-hmm. other thing it'll do is, you know, the internet is, there are lots of dark cobwebby corners and all kinds of things on most people's websites. And it will force them to clean those up and not have those straggly pages out there and all kinds of other things that they haven't looked at in 8 years or whatever, because I think it's one thing to find that in a search result, but it's another thing if a bot is consuming it and then using that as, it thinks those are your operating hours, or it thinks those are your something about your business. So, you know, I think those are probably good things where it'll force people to be yeah. cleaner and tighter on their sites.
Yeah. It's pretty common to come across, you know, posts from literally like 2015, I found when doing some like recent, like web, you know, some updates and stuff. So yeah, definitely tightening down the hatches on that type of stuff will be very useful.
Yeah. Which we've all heard about bias in models. Yeah. And this is an example of unintentional bias where, you know, nobody's saying include this information, but it's public information that's out there that the model's been trained on now. So that's another reason that you always have to remain that human in the loop and check a lot of this information that you get.
Yeah. And it'll cause some rethinking maybe of archiving information and how that's done. You know, I'm interested, we have 20 plus years worth of news stories that are still on our website from both Inside Wake Forest and the news site. We've managed to move those over mm-hmm. through all the iterations of the web and so on. But you know, let's say in those announcements, during that time, Wake Forest has had, you know, four different people lead the HR office. Is the AI smart enough to know that the thing that says, you know, this person takes over the HR office, it was from 2005, is it going to process the date and really understand, okay, that person's not here anymore? The current person is this person. So I think there'll be some challenges in figuring out if you're going to keep archived historical content, you know, can you get AI to consume that in the right way?
So we've talked about ingesting information from AI and then also using it to be generative and creating different products and artifacts. One reason we asked you to be here, Mark, was when I was asking around the university, asking for people who are using it, your name kept popping up. And so obviously you're experimenting with it and using it, and seems like your team is using it as well. We've talked to other areas of the university where they're a little hesitant. We, all three of us, are more on the administrative side. So we're in this kind of weird space where we work in higher education. We have the freedom to experiment, but there's also a little pushback from the education side in some areas where business, in the business world, they want to jump on the bandwagon. So yeah. I don't know, Mark, can you talk a little bit about how you might be encouraging your team and how other areas of the university could encourage experimentation or usage?
Yeah. And I will freely admit that, you know, the whole idea of being a professor and understanding student use of AI and all that is something that I don't even really want to think about. That seems like a really, really complicated space.
That's a scary world.
Yeah, yeah. I understand all, I mean, I know I don't understand them the way a professor would or a student would, but I can see those challenges there. And that is a lot more complicated than what we are facing in as you said, on the administrative side of things. My attitude really, I think, is if you're not experimenting or understanding, you're essentially going backwards because the people around you are, and this is a reality. You know, it's like the internet, it's like the smartphone, it's those kinds of things where it is changing our world already. It will continue to do so. And if you're not at least trying to understand even the fun things, like even if you're just doing some of the fun things right now that you see out there, and like you're at least understanding, like if you were trying to do the cartoon version of yourself or something like that,
you've definitely had ChatGPT make an action figure.
Yeah, right. But to do that, right, like you have to understand prompting, right? And
yes,
when you first do it and you get a really weird crappy looking action figure, then you're like, oh, what went wrong? You know, and then you have to get in and you have to understand, oh, I have to talk to this differently and I have to describe that and I have to do whatever. So even in that case, you're at least learning how these, these systems work, and you're, you know, expanding your own knowledge of how to do it. And hopefully then that can translate to something a little more serious. Yeah, we all had fun with the action figure. That was a good one.
So I'm going to let a quote by Dario Amodè, the head of Anthropic, paraphrase a little bit, I think, of what you said, that we can't stop the bus, but we can steer it. So
right.
AI is here to stay. Mm-hmm. We need to learn how to use it correctly.
Yeah.
I think that's spot on. And the other quote that I think has been floating around a lot is, AI is not going to take your job, but somebody who knows AI could take your job, and I
100%.
I think that's legit, right?
It augments your skills. It allows you to do more. May not replace you. It allows you to do more, and you might not need all the help of other people. You can be more productive yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And go ahead, Michael.
No, I was just gonna say you're now putting yourself at a disadvantage. You're showing up to the work site with less tools than everybody else, and you're just hurting yourself.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I see my folks like experimenting with it in all sorts of different places, which is great. And I think we're all waiting for, okay, there'll be a next tier where like the tools are easier to understand, or they're easier to, right now there's lots of things that I could use a tool that is going to look at everything I'm doing in my browser and help me do, but those tools are not clear and easy to use yet. But again, you can see like, okay, well, that's maybe the next thing that's going to become easier and easier and all kinds of stuff like that. So I think anywhere, Ryan, I think when we were talking earlier, I mentioned an example where I don't deal in spreadsheets very often, but we were trying to do an experiment where we were analyzing phone numbers in our wake alert system and trying to make sure that we were messaging students in the right way to get their phone numbers into the wake alert system. And so we had a giant spreadsheet and it had all the students in it and who had numbers and who didn't and what their affiliation was. And I did a whole bunch of manual sorting, and I don't know, it took me 30 minutes or something to produce, okay, by class, here's where we are and that kind of stuff, and then I told AI, this is what I want. This is the formula basically that I want you to analyze the spreadsheet in. And, again, in 60 seconds, AI had a table for me And that every time I get that spreadsheet back and we want to look at it again, I can just tell ChatGPT, hey, run that formula that we ran the last time, and bam, you know, here's the chart. So, you know, even in stuff like that, where it's maybe not your main thing that you do every day, experiment and, you know, see what AI brings to the table. You know, I find it fascinating, and I know maybe some people are on the other side of the fence who find it either intimidating or scary. But I,
so let's hop the fence for a second.
Fascinating part.
let's hop that fence. Let's go visit those other people. What are those challenges that we want people to be aware of, yeah, or what could be a little worrisome that you see?
Well, I mean, certainly privacy is, you know, data privacy or your own privacy is right up there. You know, anything that's, if you're doing a chatbot, you know, what information are you exposing to these models and what are they doing with it? If you're doing something personally, you know, what are you exposing to it of your personal life? And that, I think, is going to become more and more and more and more of an issue. Mm-hmm. I was reading yesterday about, you know, the continued advances in, you know, the glasses and combining AI, yeah, with XR. And as you combine, oh, yeah, those two.
Meta's all in on that.
Yeah. And if AI is recording everything I do in my life, that might be great for me. And it might, and it might help with my recall. It might help with all kinds of different things in my life. But in the meantime, I'm also recording Michael and Ryan and other people that are I'm working, yeah, with, and I'm doing, you know, so you get into all kinds of privacy types of issues.
And then I was listening to something the other day where a guy was talking about with this increased memory in these models, he was very concerned, right, about separating work and personal. That mm-hmm. when he was talking about ChatGPT specifically, but he has to be very cognizant when he asks ChatGPT something about work, he doesn't want it going back into the memory and pulling something his kids were doing. You know, so I think yeah, what you were talking about with data privacy, watching what you're putting in there, maybe all that'll get figured out in the future, but at least in the near run, that's something to be very cognizant of.
Yeah. And I think if you're all in, like, you want it to remember a lot of things because that's how it helps get better. But then what kind of consequences does that bring? Yeah. I think the other thing I would say is that I think people who are seeing the chatbot world maybe don't quite understand all of the work that goes into that. And Michael, you've been closer, I think, to the implementation of what IS has done. And mm-hmm. You know, I think people think, oh, I have a website, I'll just turn the chatbot on and it'll do its thing. Yeah. But really what it took was, like, it took IS a couple months of work. It, you know, you have to test how it's answering questions. You yeah. have to continually refine that. Because if you have a bot and it starts giving people wrong answers, then you're really in trouble. So I think I'm not sure people understand all the work that goes behind a successful bot at this point.
Yeah, like there's someone behind the scenes seeing what it's doing well, what its shortcomings are, and then, you know, discussions for, you know, hey, this is what we're seeing, and deciding, you know, what to, you know, pretty much how to structure that bot to then be able to answer questions that it's having trouble with, or, you know, guess, you know, even kind of forecasting to some degree future uses for how people are going to want to use it. So yeah, it's not as easy as just like, yeah, we bought the bot tool and we pressed the on button. Like, it's definitely not that.
Yeah.
So I've Ryan, had this love. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to mention one other thing that is not my area of expertise, but I think we've yeah. all read about it, which is really the sort of AI companion issue, and becoming a little too addicted to the idea of this is my partner and this is my, you know, that's a whole novel movie, we've already seen those novels and movies about that, and now it's really here and starting to come true.
That is scary for people of all classes and ages because the kids coming up, they know nothing else. And this is going to be integrated in their world. And then the older generations, there's reports out of other countries where this is being pushed to give them companionship. And what effect does that have? So that's a very interesting new concept that we have to follow.
And on that on and on that note, that's actually a concern of mine with AI, is what you mentioned before about the bus driving, but us steering it. I think that's a concern that I think a lot of people won't worry about steering it at all, and it'll just be this magical solution for everything, so yeah, that's definitely something I'm concerned about.
So I have this love-hate relationship with AI writing. I use it for every type of pitcher in my bullpen. I use it for my starting pitcher. I use it for the relief, and I use it for the closer all the time. Whether I'm just brainstorming, having it write something and I polish, or having it edit it, there it's giving me some great ideas, and then it's giving me some AI slop. It produces something that sounds like me, and then other times it like, wow, that was definitely computer generated. And so, Mark, you may be very expertly positioned, but how do you see the difference between the writings that come out of Gemini, Claude, ChatGPT versus human writing?
I, certainly when we started and before prompts got, really were being talked about everywhere, you could see these strings of words that ChatGPT loved to use, and it was clearly there was clearly an AI speak going on. I think the great thing that's happened, and you can find these on Twitter, you can find them all over the place, but people sharing prompts that you can either store, like if you have a paid model, but or use anytime, that are trying to strip most of that verbosity from ChatGPT or other models. And
I
so
put
that's what
something
I'm.
through a second pass yesterday. I said, make this sound less like AI wrote it.
And some of it's that simple. I mean, some of them that I've looked at and have tried are, 20 bullets long of like, don't do this, et cetera. But
Yeah, the negative prompting, the words not to include.
some of them, like you said, it's as simple as you could just start with, hey, be less AI, and see what happens. I do personally, and this changes, the models change all the time, so it's hard to tell. But I have found Claude to be really the best writing tool, and that's subjective, but I have felt like it does a really nice job of finding the right tone and point of view and all the things that you're looking for, and it doesn't seem overly verbose, and ChatGPT is fine, but I still think it sits a little more in that space. I tend to use ChatGPT if I am looking to write documentation, or like I think ChatGPT can do structural things, nicely with writing. But I tend to lean towards Claude just for the pure writing space.
So it sounds like you use multiple models and go back and forth a little bit.
And I think most of our folks have tried to do that, just because, again, they are changing and they're updating constantly, kind of seeing where they are. And, 1 minute Gemini will be doing something kind of cool, and then it'll fall backwards while ChatGPT kind of moves ahead in some ways, or whatever. I think, ChatGPT kind of has a little bit of an advantage because that's where most early adopters started playing. And so there's a little bit of that affinity. And
Yeah, of course.
if you're using the memory type stuff, I mean, that's where your stuff is stored already. And So it can be harder to jump to a different model, but
I think that's a brilliant marketing technique by some of these AI labs to increase the memory, because once you get in there, once that model knows your persona, it's going to be much harder to switch, just like you said.
Yep. And I think you're going to start to see, and I think I've read some already about, hey, we're going to make this model free for students and we're going to do whatever, you know, which is the same idea of like, how do we get in earlier and earlier in the mix?
It's the early Google model with Gmail.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, but I, like I said, I've used them all for different things. And, you know, I've seen our folks like to use them on performance reviews. I don't know if that I should let that secret out or whatever, but like, you know, I have digital folks who writing is really not their strength at all. So they'll be like, here are some bullets that I know about what I did or whatever. And like,
and that goes right back to the point we talked about before about augmenting your own skills.
Right. It might take them, you know, 6 painful hours to write a performance evaluation. And, you know, AI can get them there in 2 total or something, whatever. So, yeah, it augmented what they don't do well, and they can get back to what they're great at.
All right, Mark, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I want to give you a chance to educate some other people on how to get started. There are still a lot of people out there who haven't tried it too much. I will maybe feed you back something that you said about using that fun stuff. I think that is definitely one of my tips to tell people is use it for something personal, use it for something fun, start small, and then that'll lead to other things down the road. What other advice beyond that, which you've already highlighted, would you say?
Yeah, and I think when we're talking about fun, you know, we were kind of talking about the action figure and that kind of stuff. But really, you can be fun/practical with the whole, you know, help me make, you know, I have peanut butter and pickles and whatever in my pantry. You know, how do I make dinner out of this or, you know, whatever. You know, there's fun and practical that could be mixed together there as you kind of get going. So I think that's a great place to start. And then I think, you know, probably the biggest, the smartest place to think about is what do I do repetitively in my job or at home or whatever, that how can I think about AI in that space, you know, because a lot of things that you do repetitively, there may be ways to improve that by partnering with AI and at least, like you said, Ryan, you know, being more efficient, you know, and that's your in. Oh, I took this one task. Well, I used the spreadsheet example before. Like if you're being asked to analyze things or do stuff like that, okay, well, I got one task. I'm going to try to get in the AI space and learn how that is. And to me, once you do that, then it really, like, I don't know. I don't see how you can start to go back from that. Like once you learn like, oh, wow, look at what that saved me or look at.
We're not stopping the bus.
Yeah. Look at what it did. You know, like I think that will just kick off more and more and more. So I would think, you know, what do I do that's repetitive, redundant, whatever? What do I do every month, every week that maybe AI could you know, help me with? Or where do I need an idea? You know, where am I stuck? You know, and like, just, you don't even need a paid model. You don't need anything for that. You know, hey, AI, I'm totally stuck on this thing. Like, give me some ideas, you know, and then hopefully that starts to sprout, you know, other thoughts of what you could use it for. And then, you know, you've probably mentioned it on other podcasts, but we do have great people across campus here who love AI and can help you get down the road on like, oh, now that I'm in here, how do I get better? How do I learn? You know, Betsy is certainly somebody that we mentioned. Who else? John Montana, right? You know, Odie and others in IS, you know, plenty of people that you could reach out to. And there may be even
all great resources.
Yeah, somebody in your department may be using it and just, you know, but don't ignore
it. Just go to Michael Ferrari.
Go to Michael. But don't ignore it. Yeah.
Well, Mark, thank you so much. And I know you have probably some tweets to post and some emails to send to campus. We've cheated the campus out of some messages you've probably wanted to send for some time. So thank you again for joining us and sharing your wisdom.
That's okay. AI's been writing those tweets. I really don't do much anymore at all.
He's on a beach right now.
It's probably not even you on the screen talking to us.
That's right. It's my AI avatar that's here with you today.
He's on a beach. That's why he has that background. I know it.
Well, for all our listeners, check out deeks.ai on Spotify and Apple. And if you have any questions or want to be a guest on the show, send an email to deeks.ai@wfu.edu. Thanks again, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for the invite. I appreciate the conversation.
Thank you for listening to the Deeks.ai podcast, where Wake Forest innovators unpack the real-world magic of artificial intelligence through candid conversations. If you would like to reach out to us with any questions or comments, please email us at deeks.ai@wfu.edu. Please continue to join us as we explore how AI is transforming work across campus, one fascinating story at a time, and as we explore and discover the human side of technological innovation.